Great. Let's go ahead and start the meeting. Let me introduce first, we have Mark McMillo here. Mark is a new board member. He's a seven board members. He's a lawyer. He lives in Phoenix. He's close to the legislature. He knows how to get to the Capitol grounds. And we'll all find that he's very handy. Okay, let's get started with the meeting.
This is Linda Whitaker.
Introduce yourself so we have a
Rick Rochelle.
And this is Mark McNella. Good to be with you also. Thank you.
William Garbarino. It looks like we have who else is online? Bruce
and John.
Yeah, this is John Lacey.
All right. It looks like we have a quorum.
Go ahead. Okay.
Do we have a motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting?
I move it. John Lacey.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Does anybody have anything about the minutes of the last meeting that they disagree with?
Your procedure way to do that is absent any objections, the minutes can approve it and move on.
Okay. There doesn't appear to be anybody just from the public. I don't think there was anybody outside. Looks like there's nobody here from the public, so we'll proceed. Okay. Bruce, you sent out a report from Friends, and you gave us a report, actually, of the Jamie Burns, of the new CEO. Is there anything you want to add to that report?
No, just that I think we all approved it in its content. And we want to present it to the board at the next meeting.
You approve the part where you want to have to raise $75 million?
Well, that's our goal. I don't think we inked it in blood, but it's sure a good goal. And you know, it wasn't just picked out of the blue. It has to do with us not owning the facility in Tucson and not really owning the one in Papago, and that someday we're going to have to replace those. So. It's a good goal, and it takes care of a lot of problems, I think.
And the rest of the report was the commit was Friends pretty much in agreement with it.
Yes, they were. And if you didn't read it, what it boiled down to is to endow some key positions, improve stewardship on archival collections, provide infrastructure to ensure preservation of Arizona history, develop new exhibition programs, etc. It would include adding board members that would have the ability to raise this kind of money, and those of us that would like to be part of that could be, or are uncomfortable asking for that kind of money, we will be retained as an advisory. And as an advisory board, we would organize a couple of events, the Arizona History Congress, as well as the Legislative Awards for Excellence in History, which would move around the state. And a few other things. It's all in the report.
All right. I'd like to have a report from the work group from Linda and Leonard. Leonard and Linda are working on trying to keep us updated on the status of the progress that we made for complying with auditor's report.
So the sunset review, Mark, just to recap just a bit, was a traumatic experience for us. It lasted almost 20 months. It was critical. There were a number of deficiencies there, but overall we got a 10-year kind of approval to continue our business. Our goal, Len's goal, and he was the former president when the Sunset Review occurred, and I was a staff member. And currently, there's not a lot of institutional memory about what happened during that sunset review, or the number of retirements, et cetera. But on the board, so the most experienced regarding this sunset review would be Bill Ponder, Kim Dittrich, who took care of the financial part of it. And what, it's quite lengthy. There's a summary, there's a little short one, okay, then there's a longer one. And the short one is meant for just quick tracking. And what I want to report is that there has been, even since we met the first part of September, because of multiple meetings that have occurred, there is some progress made. We already heard from Bruce, and this is on the 1.1, we already heard from Bruce about the Vision 2020, or I don't know the numbers on there, Bruce, but the Vision proposal.
2022.
Okay, 2022. And it explains a little bit further. It develops this notion a little bit further, because what that sunset review audit is looking for is specificity. A generalization won't cut it, and so that's an attempt to begin a more specific kind of finding. It's also very, very important, because a repeated theme here is fundraising and our capacity to fundraise.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
You bet.
Mr. Joy just walked from the room. For Mark McNeil's information, we have another group, and it was formed as a result of what we thought was going to be the auditor's complaint. It's our foundation. It's called Flint. It's completely unconnected to this, to AHF, other than it was solely for the purpose of raising funds for AHF. The reason it was incorporated was informed because we as a state agency, I guess, I hate to use that word.
Quasi agency,
right. Yeah. We're afraid that the state with it, in an economic crisis, would sweep the funds from AHS. Well, they can't do that. The grants is completely separate. The 501c3. And John Lacey's the one that put it together, more or less. It's been in existence for, 5 years now, John?
Yeah, that's about right.
Does anybody have anything you want to add to my little description about Friends? Go ahead, then. That's right.
This will show up in various parts of Sunset Review in terms of fundraising and that kind of thing, but it's important that we begin to solidify that. It sounds like the Friends group is well on its way. And I'm just going to march down this to some of the key points, and maybe you want to defer some of this, Roy, but when we come down to 1.8, 1.9, we are under the impression that some of this, the role of regional chapters will be discussed at your executive committee. Perhaps that was not done. That's going to get deferred to some future date. Is that correct? Okay. There's hardly any part of this, of the agency function that this doesn't touch on. And so one of the things that we now know, and has now been found and collated and multiple copies made, is that we have 8 signed MOUs with our various 501c3 organizations.
Okay, let me stop you. I didn't know there were 8.
There are 8.
There are 8 of them.
Yeah, there's more than this. Yes. Yes, indeed. One is called like Los Amigos.
Pathfinder.
Yes.
Historically,
there are 4 bases, but there are multiple organizations in some locales. So they have a relationship to us. There are 501c3s. They have done levels of fundraising. But that was done several years ago. But we have 8 of them. And what I can do is make sure that you get a list or copies or whatever. Pending. They don't. That's the one 501c3 where we don't have a formal relationship with. And the Sunset Reviewers want MOUs in place that outline these relationships, essentially.
Are these pretty much the same template between one organization?
They were created by different people, Bill. Do you want to explain a little bit?
We ran, when the auditors got Charter audit, they requested. So we went out and Leonard and I and others, we went to our local organizations. We had a basic form that I had, I think a particular state, and we kind of worked on it. Some people wanted more, some people wanted less. So there's a basic form of the memorandum of understanding for different with each one of the groups. Like the FlagDeck group, they were very sensitive about having to give the money to AHS, and so they wanted to be able to pull out at any time. These are all things they're not binding, but they have 30 days to get out of it. But that's what it
is. I'm just going to make a note here. Okay. So this is in red. The stuff we want you to read is in red. And why do we have this template? Because it was actually created in an attempt to have a tracking document. Sunset reviewers want evidence that we're paying attention to this as a board. That's why this thing got created. So there's a shortened summary one, but a more lengthy one, because some details are going to be quite pesky, I suspect. One thing in here that is not in red, and slide down to 2.1, A through D, 2.2, maybe it's A through F. This is problematic. It will be ongoing. And even though a lot of this sunset review is implemented, it will get reviewed again. All these items will get reviewed again. I think there's 21 or 22 items in all. And we already know that we're going to be accountable for things that relate to our collections management. That includes reports from the software that we use. We should be able to call things up and say, point it to the auditor and say, here's all the stuff we've got. We've got over 1 million items. The auditors in turn say to you, museum director, okay, I picked that one. Find this, okay? It is an on-site test. And we also know that they're going to be looking for numbers that haven't been reported in quite the same way. They're interested in percentages. What percentage is your highest, rarest stuff? There's a whole tiered system that's actually based on risk management. And we're obligated to file those reports. Currently, it's raw data that's being reported. This month, we entered 1,000 objects into our database. And the auditors are going to say, how many do you have in there? How much is your backlog? How much is not in there? And what are you doing about it? So we can get a hold of those numbers. They haven't been fully reported in that way yet, and that is something we need to look at. And so because of some big staff changes, both here and in Tucson, James is going to actually talk about this very specifically in January. So that's just sort of FYI.
That's Dr.
Burns. That's right. So it's sort of a heads up. It's one of those things that have been simmering in the background, but we know it will occupy the majority of the time that the sunset reviewers spend, both a paper review, online review, and an on-site review. And we have to be prepared for it. The other question I have for you, Voy, is I think it's been a year, at least according to the website, a year since the collection committee met or at least posted minutes. And I'm wondering if maybe we could have a conversation about how that function may be improved in terms of oversight. Not determining what you collect, okay, but what kind of numbers should be reported to that committee so that they can zero in on it, ask questions about it, in the same way that we ask questions about the financial reports. and we haven't quite functioned that way, but it also gets us out of the weeds, okay? It gets us to a macro oversight as opposed to you can collect this thing and you can't collect this thing, et cetera. So just to think about that a bit, because they're going to be looking for evidence where the collection committee has oversight to this portion of the sunset review. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think what we should do and how we manage it there. What about the inventory itself? Do we know what our inventory is? No. Now, remember, to distinguish, there's the three-dimensional, you know, on regular paper.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, normally in the library setting, it's the paper. And you go into your, you know, your file and say, well, where, you know, where's the book by Mark Twain on this? And it says over here. So,
or the photograph or whatever.
Correct. So you're saying that's not for our...
We...
In either case, three-dimensional or paper.
No, we know in library and archives because we have... We both use very different industry-based software. And so it is actually easier for us in library and archives because most of that stuff is kind of homogeneous. It's not that simple with the software that the museum side uses, nor is every site uniformly prepared to use that software. Everybody has it. Everybody has the same version. Not everybody has the expertise to do the data entry.
Now, so therefore, if you were an auditor looking for problems, you say, well, how much stuff do you have in Northern Arizona?
Correct.
I don't really know. And whether you're an agency, quasi-agency, or private, that's really not a good answer.
And even paper, even old stuff, some formatting of it being cataloged somewhere.
Cataloged, so library and archives.
Got it, but I mean the stuff.
The other stuff?
Here's like a three-dimensional and paper.
Okay.
Paper, since things were pretty right. Well up to there, it's the three-dimensional stuff, you know. Where is this thing, or this branding iron, and I don't even know if you have one. That's really not good.
And so the key is, that data has been entered. People are doing that. What we need a report about, you're entering 500 items a month. How much you got there, basically? Can we find it, basically? Those numbers are going to vary throughout. But the backlog issue is key, and that is, I would have to say right now, it appears to be an unknown, because we can't.
But, I mean, how would you quantify it? Would you say more than one and less than a million, or, I mean...
No, percentages, so that it
well,
is...
Well, you've got to start with what you have before you know where you are.
One assumes, we've gone online saying we have over a million X, Y, or Z.
Well, that's the number I've heard.
Yeah, but... But verifying that?
Okay, I'm with you. We're on the same team.
Okay.
So the point being, though, that if we say we have a million and we now have 1,000 logged in, then you know, we're one
way to go.
And I don't think it's that bad. It's just sort of an unknown, okay? Because it's been ongoing, but with these changes and professional staff, an impact how rapidly we get it through. It impacts on how rapidly you ingest what you collect, okay? And so there are ways of having to control that. You just should be aware that it's out there and it will be a target, even though you're not familiar with it.
Because I've been working on the policy, you know, the bylaws and
policy.
And he said on my list was the collection policy. He said, that's pretty well up to speed, and I assume in the collection policy you have accession, which is what we collect,
correct.
And deaccession,
that is correct.
Which is what we get rid of. And if that's true, then this part of it will be done, which is whatever it was in here. What we collect and how we collect it. If that's true, then we can say this part is done. Now the inventory is another issue.
Another issue, right. What is interesting about the Sunset Review, and this will come up almost every time, is that we are making progress in a number of areas by first identifying it and then trying to take care of it at the front end. And that is the summation of my report. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure. What page do you want?
You know, somewhere in that report I saw that there was a notation about committee meetings and minutes and how we keep our minutes and what records we keep. Are we handling that satisfactorily?
From what I've been able to tell, we are. We're in compliance with the public meeting law, we're in compliance with posting. What I can't answer is, what about committee? The committee online, anyway, doesn't seem, the committee meetings generally don't appear online. Maybe they're all embedded in the minutes themselves. I'm just wondering how that is being, the committee level.
Notice of the committee.
That's right. Notice is going
on. I could not locate that
either.
Notice is different from the minutes.
Sure.
So you have the open meeting requires notice of chapter of the board itself and of the committee, all committees. And so that either happened or it didn't, and it's one piece of paper. We're having a meeting, and here's our announcement. The rest of it, which is the minutes, of course, we have always done it at the board level. I don't, chapter level, and body, and historically, the committee kind of did it or didn't, you know, or kept it for their own use of the committee. And so I don't know how that it is, and I just read it. I don't know if it's in the, I think it's in the open meeting that you have to be finished.
Yeah.
That's where it
but
is.
It doesn't necessarily say, I don't think it necessarily says that you have to post them, although on our website.
You don't have to post them. You do have them available. Yes,
right.
Correct.
So right now the website seems to post, has posted some since 2017, hasn't posted others. Sure. That's all I can.
Okay, I've gone back and looked at the minutes that the website has on it, and it looks like to me there are very few minutes from any of the chapters. There are very few notices. There's no place where minutes are available to be reviewed. Is there something we should do as a governance committee that would bring these
you know the Sunset Review is sensitive about that, right?
You don't have to post the notice, but you have to post the minutes. We need to make it known where the meeting is. That's the question.
To have a procedure that Paul said is by each committee meeting, whoever the chairman is should, let's just say, make a simple email to the executive director or assistant, whoever it is, and say, here's the minutes of the meeting, thank you. And none. Otherwise, you got somebody carrying a piece of paper around or file. And that's our policy.
Richard, we're recording this. But I think that recording is sufficient to satisfy the minute requirement. We'll have a copy of that recording. It'll be available here at the on the premises. Okay. So are we doing it? That's the question. I mean, we have a lot of rules. Do we follow the rules?
That's the key.
And I think that the auditors are going to say, okay, where can I see the minutes of your governance committee meeting held on September 18th?
And part of that helps to solidify their function, that accountability loop. That's what they're looking for.
They were looking strong at that.
Yes, they were.
If I recall correctly. And we need to set that up and make sure that that's done. Can we do that as a governance committee, or is that something that, how do we go about that?
That is a very interesting question. I don't know.
Are we to do that in the policy?
I think we can make a policy that establishing procedure for the posting of minutes of meetings, whether or not it's simply a notice that the recording of the minutes is available at a certain place, or that there's a written email of the minutes was posted at a certain point. And maybe that's the point, is that maybe we need to have a central place for the posting of minutes.
John, you say you should put that in the notice? The minutes? Are you saying that that should be?
What I'm saying, Bill, is that we could establish a policy that says that copies of minutes, whether or not they be emailed or that it identifies where the a recording of minutes of a various committee are available. So this would simply be a policy that establishes a central location for the review of minutes.
I can read you the statute, area 38431.01, and it says requires subcommittees and advisory committees of all bodies to take minutes or record all of the meetings, including executive sessions. So that's not just open meeting, that's actually the statute. So there's no question that we're supposed to do it. I mean, even if we didn't have a statute, these guys are saying we need to do it. So. Now we have a policy, which sounds right, to make a policy, have a board pass a resolution. We don't have a policy book that says policy 47, but we pass that and say, resolve, here's the protocol for filing all minutes of all advisory and committee meetings, at whatever it is. And then you're done. Now at least you have something to show these guys. Now, if they say, let's see the minutes for the governance committee meeting, or September 14th, and hopefully we have.
We do. I mean,
we have a bunch of committees. So.
But we have a lot of committees, and I look on the website, and I see
nothing.
No reference to any minutes or any notes.
We don't need minutes on there.
No reference to the minutes in
where you can find them.
Viewed or seen.
We can do that once. Assuming that we have.
Right.
We solved it online, though.
But there's no notice of notices on there either.
Well, that's different.
You know, and I think that they need to be there. But how do we do that? Do we enforce that as a matter of policy? Do we make a policy, or do we ask that the board make a policy that the minutes?
Well, I think we have a policy where it's efficient. As the word policy, John may remember too, but I'm 99% sure that we discussed and agreed that we had to have, we had to post. Well, way, way back, they didn't post anything because there's no action could be taken. They just failed binding action. The open meeting and that statute says it doesn't matter if it's binding if it's a recommendation, that's an action. You have to post it and take minutes.
Do we need to take steps further to make sure it's done?
I don't know in the history, in the records, I don't have a board resolution, a test board that says you have to do this and here's how you do it. But it wouldn't hurt redundancy to say in law business it doesn't vitiate, so let's do it again if we can't find it.
Well, Richard, I got a suggestion here. Why don't you, for the next meeting, for the November meeting, why don't you create a policy that we can adopt as a governance committee and recommend to the full board?
Okay.
Would you do that for me? I know you've got it right.
Like the law of punishing the suggestion, right?
Yeah.
No, it's utilizing the tremendous ability of the person with the most power.
That sounds like
yes. Hang on, somebody's trying to speak here. Yes.
Yes, well, let me, that's John Lacey. I think it's fine that we develop a policy on this, but I think that we need to then, going into that, we need some idea of where you want these various notices and minutes to be posted. Is do we want to establish a separate file on the website? And I think if we were going to do something like that, then we need the folks internally within the society to tell us, okay, we've created a file for the posting of these notices and minutes. And then once we have that identified, then we can develop a policy that says that, all notices and minutes of meetings shall be posted in file X.
Okay, John, in order to keep from getting into the regional factors, can't we just do it saying at the chapter headquarters of each chapter?
But I think that the problem with doing that, Bill, is that we're in our particular case here, we're meeting as the governance committee of the society, and I think that it, in my mind, it really doesn't. You know, you can put some files in that that conduit for the various chapters, and so you know you could go into the file or the notices and minutes, and when you got into that, then you'd have some files for board committees and the various chapter committees. We're going to be working in the cloud here, and it's not going to be necessarily regional.
Hmm. May I ask, if you create a policy, what steps do you have to take to determine compliance with that policy, and what levers, if any, do you have that is non-compliant?
The levers on the policy, which I'll have to talk to conduit, have to talk to Burns about. But it's a good point, because you can't just say, do this, that's the next
question. Right.
You have to say, and staff X, or persons or Y, will review monthly the postings, because we won't know if somebody had a meeting and they didn't tell anybody and they didn't post it, and they keep, but, you know, well, that's an outlier. So we should know every meeting that happened because it should have been posted, and therefore we should follow up with, was there minutes filed. So the secretary, whoever, would call board and say, well, I need any minutes on this, and we just take that in effect. Otherwise, I don't know what else.
I don't think it would be satisfactory to have a volunteer. And we're I think it's got to be staff. Should be the executive director or his nominee.
Yeah.
Mr. Coy.
One of the things we're working on is John Head.
This is John Lacey again, and I'm sorry I'm going to have to be leaving here in about 2 minutes, but it seems to me that in terms of taking the steps to post the notice and to post this should be the secretary of the various organizations. I mean, that's a function of the secretary. If it's not done, or that we see a pattern of not compliance, then we go down to the organization and say, okay, Mr. Secretary, Ms. Secretary, how come this wasn't done? So please bring it up. But, then I think that the staff can also be responsible for monitoring that. I'm going to have to run, but before I do, let me say that with regard to the various proposals for amendments to the bylaws, I've reviewed a couple of them and given Bill my comments. I agree with the comment concerning the quorum. It strikes me that most committees should have at least 5 members, and that way you can continue to have 2-member working groups without violating the open meeting law. But gotta run. Thank you all.
Thank you, John, for your participation.
Thanks, John.
Okay, Bruce, you can take up where John left off. You get anything you need to say?
He's still here, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm still here. You're doing good. You're doing good. Don't want to get in your way.
Okay, you were talking about who should implement.
Yeah.
One of the things that for the last 6 weeks that I've been working on is along with Michael Wade, is setting up an evaluation process for the executive directors based on the implementation of policies, because the board should not be doing anything except policies and setting goals. And as such, it would look like what we need to do is write a policy and then expect it to be implemented by the staff. Not by, and because we're nothing but a bunch of citizens, volunteers.
No,
that's really all we are. And as such, then our job is to establish what we want to have the society do, set the goals for them to do, and then get out of their way and evaluate them on whether they do it correctly or not do it to our satisfaction. So, Bill, what you said about somebody needs to be responsible, it needs to be the staff, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, there's two parts to that. One is getting it done. That should be secretarial. No, I got nothing in the file. Thank you. Now, if it's like staff, you know, whoever, then and the director, executive director can't tell you, well, you didn't get the minutes, so get it done very well.
Mm-hmm.
So now it becomes a board report, maybe I'm making stuff as I go, saying, well, we need minutes from the following committees over these last 3 months. It didn't happen. And
Bill, I have a question for you, given the various levels of...
part, was it done?
That's
now,
right.
The staff can't say to the board, okay, you guys,
no,
you're not doing your job.
But I think that's when they did inform the president.
Of course.
And they, then it's the unlucky guy who is president or woman that says to him, you got to get them in for the staff or...
That's correct.
I mean,
yeah,
then there's no
politician section. Right?
Yeah.
We have four chapters that have varying levels of function, et cetera. And so are we assuming that they all have the capacity to write minutes, send minutes, post minutes? Is that, do you feel it's evenly distributed? Okay.
They're open. They can just send an email to the home office and let the home office.
And traditionally, this has been this implementation of minutes and so forth has been a staff function. I think the problem in the past year has been we really haven't had a secretary. You know, we've had that changeover. The secretary that was there might not have filled all her duties. And so that's maybe one of the reasons what we're seeing on the website.
Well, the secretary who wasn't at the meeting can't help us,
mm-hmm.
except to the extent that she gets an email and puts it in the right place.
Sure.
She can, however, say, I didn't get anything from you guys.
Yeah.
And then if nobody does anything, then they can tell the president, board president.
Well, FF5.1 is one of the recommendations that I think we need to clarify. It's on the last page. I think we need to say, hey, Nick, we're looking into the fact that a number of our committees from our chapters and a number of our committees from our board have not properly posted, nor made available to the public.
5.1.
I think you need to go a little further with
yeah.
that. Okay, I was just trying to draw attention to the fact that I think we have a responsibility to make sure that these notices are on our website, one, two, posted in the appropriate place. And that where the minutes are located.
And where they are, where you can find them.
So,
and it's the board's responsibility to determine who's responsible for what.
I think this is all set.
Yeah, but
yeah,
if the board makes that determination, or if it's a management type official.
Yeah, I think you brought on the executive director since he's not here and say, hey,
executive
director, you either take care of it yourself, or you appoint somebody in your staff.
Yeah, but we'll make clear in the policy, it's not his job to take minutes because he wasn't there.
Yeah.
No.
It is his job to see if things are posted to his knowledge, and if he's got minutes, if he doesn't have minutes, we can say, then call blank, I don't know, call void, I don't know, whatever.
Richard, I don't think you're saying that the executive director is responsible for it, but you should make sure that somebody on his staff.
Staff, call staff.
Sure.
Executive directors were responsible for everything. And remember, it's like the board, he can delegate responsibility, authority, but not responsibility. He is responsible if it never happens, because I told Mary to do it last year. Nothing happened, sorry.
So
that doesn't work.
So right now, our website is
closed. What's your point?
Well, it's a new website. I don't think they populated every...
Nine pages.
They haven't populated everything. And what... Maybe you need to ask is when can we expect that to be populated? Yeah. So it's brand new, but
the new website isn't on board. Period. We need to get it on board. But that's not governance. That's
no.
That's
governance would say that it's not working. Please fix it. That's all
got.
These days the website is part of work.
And all that is an integral part of the audit. They'll go to that website
first. Right. They'll
go to that website.
It's an issue that we've aired.
Okay.
Do you have anything else on this, Linda?
No, that's enough.
Is there anybody got a copy of the Auditor General Report 13-13? I assume everybody does.
I don't know that I don't know.
I haven't.
I have the 21 pages that were
And I don't have it with me, but.
The original, if you ought to look at the original, we we're lucky we got out of the room with our scouts.
Yeah, let me see. If you were going to prioritize what needs to be done, what would you say would be, I just want to get an idea, what would be the most important thing we could do between now and the time the next audit is the inventory?
No. I mean, that's staff issue.
I'm talking about staff
or in the big we.
The big entire building. Okay.
The whole thing.
Oh, yeah, we, the group.
I think my bias, you know, is going to be collection management. That's my bias. That's my expertise. That's my work.
You are no longer in the library.
I'm no longer in the library. I am. Scary.
Go back to 1 through 10.
I think that middle section is a real worry. And that has collection management. So that broad category. So start at 2.1.
Is that the most vulnerable, you think? As far as the audit is concerned?
Perhaps. I think that our demonstrated ability to fundraise is going to be right on up there. They're going to look at, can we even do it? And I suppose maybe right near there, because they spent so much time on it, is to define relationships between among all these groups, be it the 501, further define it. Are our MOUs sufficient? Does it satisfy them? I really don't know. Do they have to be refined? Do they have to be updated? I don't know that. But that relationship thing is part of what they see as accountability. How does the whole thing work together?
Well, the mistake, and I was there when that whole thing came up, it was an or a group auditor opinion that if we have people out there raising money, quote, that we should lock them in and say, okay, here's what you need to do. Well, none of those people are going to do it. They're independent. You don't tell the Thornton League now, here's what you need to do, or any of the others. Certainly go to the Steele Foundation and say, now, let's agree on what you're going to do for us this year, Mr. Steele Foundation. It doesn't happen. That was their mental state, though, is you got fundraisers, but you don't have the contract. Get the contract and tell them how you're going to give the money. That doesn't work.
Really?
So we kind of did a namby-pamby thing.
Let's look at 1 through 10. 1 through 10 are entirely dependent on us being other than an agency. Agencies don't go out there and raise money. They don't have MOUs with other affiliates. So 1 through 10, you can just wipe off if you decide and identify ourselves as a state.
Well, that's back to our earlier conversation where you say you slice and dice.
You know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we ought to comply with 1 through 10 as perfectly as possible so we're the state agency.
Well, by complying, of course, you're buying into the
fact. No, you're buying into the fact that we're our independent chapters. We're independent. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that'll fail?
Who's we in the dance group?
I think if you look
at it, we're going to get into this in a minute and a further question down the road, but if we get into the agency concept, identify ourselves, our status, if we say we're an agency, if we're a fishing game, if we're a state park, we're not out there raising money like that.
That's right.
Okay, so 1 through 10 of the auditor's report, we say, hey, we don't have to comply with 1 through 10, we're a state agency. That's why I want to stay away from state aid. That's why.
Well, no,
I made this argument with everybody in the room.
No, I'm on your team, and I had suggested, and then before I left, or was off the board, that the conversation, and I say conversation, not memorandum, not opinion, with somebody that has some authority in the audit process, to say, please explain to us how this works, because you don't have a meeting at ADOT in the audit and say, where's your fundraising?
That's right.
And you don't go to Fish and Game. You don't go to DES. You don't go here. So we don't want to argue with you, but just please explain how this works. Now, why do that? Because at least at minimum, we'll put the question to them. say, because they don't have any doubt. They say, you're state agency in the story, that's it, you're done.
But they're not determined. But
I know, but that's their opinion. So now they
have a script.
Yeah, well, I know that, but if you, but this is the state, we wouldn't be having a sunset audit if they didn't think for an agency to be sunset.
No, but when we identify ourselves.
No, we don't have to identify ourselves as anything. We say, your position here is that we are
state agency. They didn't identify us.
Well, they have. They do.
No, we can back off. They're just auditors.
Okay.
We don't have to let them identify us. We can identify ourselves.
Well, no, but we're turning that argument around. For example, well, according to this, this is a state agency under sunset. Yes, that's true. Okay, now what we're confused about is being, in your opinion, you don't have to say in our opinion, a state agency, like Fish and Game, like things out like this. How is it that we're tasked with district, you know, not the idea, how is it we're tasked with this fundraising responsibility when no other agency is? Could you explain that? Now, if they come in with a cogent argument, I'd be really interested to hear. And if they cannot do it, well, then maybe we can get a little of this crack off our back.
Well, that's why I'm not anxious to jump into this thing. That's why I sort of put it off to the side and want to keep away from it, because I think that once we get into that argument,
we're not even in the argument. This is a microcosm of the question.
I know, but the question is going to, it's like the federal government take over the states and the states take over the little people.
Well, but remember, they think they've already
done it.
They don't even think it's made. We know it's made because they have statutory things that says that you can do things with agents. And that may be they come up with it. I don't like the numbers, you know, and it's just my opinion.
Roy, in your meetings with the auditors, you've met with them, is there, I mean, I realize this is a template, this is a standard 22 items that get evaluated. So
I have not talked to them about any of these items individually.
Okay.
When I've talked to them, it's been a philosophical discussion of where we stand in relationship to what they're evaluating. So what you're talking about falls right into the conversations I've had with the auditors.
You know,
are you also suggesting, Bill, that we could persuade them to waive some of these?
No, I don't want to waive.
But you want to be able to pass.
No, I want to be able to meet one of them. And I want to be as independent as possible. I want to rely upon funds from other groups to support us. I want to move away from the state having to give us huge appropriations more than they give us. I want to move it back to a regional chapter situation. I'm probably going to lose this argument. I can tell you right now, it's a loser probably. But I want to see each of our chapters retain their identity and their history of their region. And I've talked to Bull about it, I've talked to everybody I can about it.
Well, I think that I agree with you that doing this stuff, because we want to do this stuff, is a good idea. It's a team to say, you will do this because you are an agency, and then they say, well, if we're an agency, why isn't the team not doing this? That's two different things, isn't it? But your concept of having as much of the infrastructure of private enterprise possible, I agree 100%. It's just that I think having the state saying you have to do this and the state saying you are an agency are inconsistent, and nobody seems to seem to be bothered by that.
I'm a state's rights advocate.
I don't think that they have even considered that part.
I think it's probably.
I mean, really and truly, because they look at us. The reason I was late is I was with Emily Radakovich, who is the person that will be appointing of the board members, they think we're a state agency. I mean, I can tell by...
I think that's right, Bill.
Oh, sure.
I think you're absolutely right, but I think that we can move away from being a pure state agency.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing what we can do. I'm telling you what they think we are.
Oh, they do. No doubt about it.
The auditors think we're a state agency. Everyone I talk to, and I listen to, you're a state agency. We're giving you money. We're deciding who's going to be on your board.
Sure.
You know, you go down the list. I'm not going to waste your time. But our job is to change their attitude if that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
And the only way I think we can do that is to get to the point that we know what the management of the associated society is and what the board's responsibilities are. So when we present it to them, we're emphasizing these first 10 items right here.
So to whom? Are you talking about the auditors themselves? Are you talking to
anyone we talk to in the state? Because I'll tell you, the whole state thinks we're nothing but a state agency.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, I think we can mold it into, if we don't jump the gun, if we really take our time with this, I think we can mold this into a hybrid type situation where each chapter retains its identity, its chapter boards, and its strength.
Well, we retain the chapter boards because it says right in the statute.
Exactly.
The our board exists can create them and delegate them as it sees fit.
Yeah.
But did you?
There's no reason that we wouldn't have a chapter.
Did they come in here and they ask it?
No, there is one in there that says, well, you really.
What do you want? Do you need chapter boards?
Yeah.
Why did that question come up? It came up because they didn't have.
Any idea what the hell they were
with
doing?
There, and we, so but that is why it appears here.
Okay.
We couldn't articulate it, and we couldn't verify what the relationship was.
Once again, we don't know what the hell we're doing. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's just the reason that they were questioned.
Okay, there's one I think about it. Linda, do you have anything else you want to add to your report? I think you guys are doing a really great job.
Oh, thank you so much.
I'm
really serious.
You put us on the list of what we need to do. We're not, it's his responsibility. It's not the government board responsibility.
That's it. The boy needs to fix it.
Shut up, Coy. Get at it.
Okay, Coy, you're on the firing line. Make sure we comply with all these.
Yeah, but if you read what the comment was, you know, if the board decides to leave a chapter is a good idea, then the board should review and possibly advise clearly defining the chapter's roles and responsibilities. Well, hello, we have to do that.
We did that at a meeting when you were still on the board. We had the question came before the board, and the board reaffirmed the concept of chapter.
That's only the concept. That's not the same thing.
No, I mean, but we didn't move from there, but we should have moved from
should
there.
Should have.
That's right.
That's
but
right.
We did confirm. We did say we
want. Oh, I agree with that.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, this would be like, this is a business. There's no government involved. And you've got four branch offices. We should say what those branch offices do and what their responsibility is.
And you know you can do that real simply with two things. You can give them the responsibility of spending the, what is, 1107 money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing they're responsible for is appointing someone to the board every 4 years from that chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rest of it can all be advisory. But when you're talking to the auditors, every one of them could say, yeah, we know exactly what the chapter responsibility are. And they're even talked about in the statute.
But look what our directors are doing now. Look at Les, bro. His board called him and says, do we need to have a chapter board? Flagstaff is to eliminate him via director, local regional director. And I think that's what's happened generally. They want to get rid of him. And the director wants to direct the machine.
But where's that coming from? I get the sense that some of this is coming from the chapter board members themselves.
Well,
not from up here, but
they don't know what their responsibility is.
Nobody gives them anything to do.
Yeah, that's an internal question rather than
that. And we can direct that. That's up to the board to direct that, but we have to sit. I don't know if it's a function of governance or not.
But if they know of a couple of things they have to do, they may need only one board meeting a year to take care of it. I mean,
touch up and involve the community and the board.
Hey, no. I'm talking about what they can do. Now, what we want them to do is to be a vehicle for the whole community.
To do versus what they can do. They can do, they can meet once a week.
Yeah.
They have to get to 1107 and the annual, they can, and then the you can part could be
anything you want.
Yeah. But you don't have to get the directors to take the initiative.
Of course, the policy is that we would like to have the chapter do the following thing. Staff has to implement at the director level.
Right.
The director has to cooperate, and that looks like the following statement.
Is this a government function?
No, the board function. But we can advise the board on kind of like, we recommend that, and then we can't do, we can't do anything.
But as a governance, we need to have you write a policy. I'm serious, that can enable us to set goals as a board for the museum executive director, whoever we want to, so we can end up getting it finished.
Well, I wonder if they have a job description in-house in here of what a chapter director, you know, staff director does that.
I do have for
that
the museum director.
What
this is a really great break-in policy that we need to have drafted. And we have nobody on the board that's drafted one or anything yet.
I'm still wondering what 1107 money is.
1107 money is money. You'll be educated quickly with that.
Somebody is directed towards that particular chapter.
Are we, so, in keeping with Bill's going slow here, is this part of a broader discussion? Is this really a committee decision here? Or is this, as I think Richard pointed out, or maybe it's a broader board discussion?
You raised it. You and Leonard raised it.
Yeah.
The issue. I think
we raised it because it's here.
I don't know.
I'm lost here. Which issue are we talking about?
The role of chapter board. Right, okay. The function and the role of chapter board.
The identity of our group, too. They raised the issue of identity.
We did.
That has to be a board.
Well, how are you going to raise it? Who's going to bring it up?
Well, I think it has to be brought up. I mean, the governance, in my opinion, would say, pursuant to this recommendation, decide who they are, which is common sense, and it is our recommendation that the AHS board, now we can say some ideas are as follows, maybe. We can't make any decision and implement anything. And no committee can. They can recommend to the board to do something. And
you could write a policy to recommend that for the board, Mark.
Oh, so I'm struggling with writing policy to direct that a chapter. You're kind of
the roles and functions are further delineated.
So I'm feeling like a blank slate here. I'm writing on this.
You and I can collaborate.
You're actually getting into virtually a bylaw amendment that, you know, if you say, I don't know what it says right now about chapters, but that's more than a policy. Now, you have these policies about money and this and that.
The bylaws are really explicit on that, about our chapter board, our chapter boards.
Well, it says it's we can grant a charter for the organization operation of pay charters. The powers for the directors of the chapter shall define the charter by the charter. Now, there's a point for government is, do we have all of the charters?
I have our charter.
Well, we should have all of the charters. Well, the society should have all the charters. At one time, I think I found a lot of them. And we as the government should have to say that these charters make sense and or the outdated.
I do not.
You're about to get one.
And then the chapter bylaws, we should have to.
You have to quit practice.
The membership, solicit and encourage membership in the society.
That's really explicit about what it is.
Am I hearing that there's just no, that it's already there in paper, but there isn't oversight with regard to compliance with what is on paper?
Probably, yeah.
So then the question becomes, what tools do you have for compliance, if any?
Well, we don't have any, so that would be the policy. You know, in other words, that, you know, a chapter that's provided in, you know, ancient bylaws, chapter 11,
right.
We need to implement some of the provisions of this bylaw provision as follows. And what would that be? That's a separate question. And
as a policy.
Yeah. This is the enabling legislation. Yeah. I'll just keep right here in the bylaws. Not doing something with it is what. Well, for example, the policy is, it doesn't say in here, but the policy is every meeting shall have bylaws, every meeting shall have plus notice. and you'll do this, that, you know, and then some, then somebody figured it out. Well, that's almost a clerical thing. Did we get them into the Northern Arizona meeting in July, or did we not? And then they say to you, because the number 8 says to the government authority over all of that. Northern Arizona is not giving us any paperwork.
And that's part of it. If some of that gets posted, then their activities, their acts and stuff like this is right there. Here's what we've done.
Which is very helpful because they have some idea what's
absolutely
going on.
Absolutely.
I like when it was charters. Be a cumbersome.
I'll see if I have them. I know I don't have them. They've got to be 5 years out of the hole, but I'll see what I have. But in any event, we ought to be able to, we were pretending the auditors say, well, I'd like to see the charter for Yuma. And it's going to be, well, somewhere.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That's not a good answer.
I don't know what I can
ask.
Okay.
And you're looking at the original charter that...
Well, I only care about what's current now.
Okay.
We don't care about the 20-year-old one. I have them going back to 1864, but we just care about current.
Right now.
Well, but one like one. Flagstaff got funds to run this museum. They then entered into an agreement with Historical Society. The Historical Society granted them a charter. And that charter has since been amended. It was amended in 1994 or 7 by Weezer D.
7.
And,
97.
By the way, in that charter, it says that if there's any reason it can be dissolved by the state, and they can walk away from it, they have to get the
question. I don't think it can be by the state, it can be by others.
But that
Coming around through.
Okay. The questions then revert back to the Northern Arizona Historic Society, not NAS, Northern Arizona Historic Society.
Well,
and where would they go?
You see, that's very
interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
In the barn, where we...
Oh, yeah. That's something
okay,
you like the barn.
There is a state statute that says, in the event of dissolution, everything reverts to the state. Now, as I told you, I think the Tucson Museum is owned by HS nonprofit. And you're just saying it reversed to the center. So that is a government issue head on.
It is.
Now
we want to know.
So one of the things is we can say, well, beyond doubt, 1967, 1968, 1969, we were part of this here in the story. Therefore, everything we have before that belongs to that nonprofit. And remember, we still file 501c3 tax return every year. And we may want to have that
new.
We may have that in our hands if we want to at some point.
Wait. Let me ask a question. What's 599 year over year? What entity?
Well, now you're getting a little bit of
governmental entity.
No. Year. I can tell you, there's Arizona Historical Society files now. What is that? Well, it's not an ink, particularly, because it's a state agency. ADOT's not an ink, it's just a state agency. So it's a very interesting question, and this just keep pulling on these strings, you know, and they keep getting longer and longer. So the point is that Bill Ponder will file with it, and just think if they're doing a corporate society, a 501c3. Well, to be a 501c3, you need to be a corporation. And I think John Lacey looked up I think it is still as a corporation for a while, it fell off the record. But the Arizona Corporation Commission has the Arizona Corporate Society on it.
Well, they all have their own 501c3 separate from the museum. Tucson has theirs. Flagstaff has theirs.
This one is for the whole society.
Very wonderful.
And so, but it has...
Different than the Friends of AAC.
Oh, yeah,
very different. That's a separate we can make it. As they could get.
So there's no... But Bill Ponder's done this now. The interesting part is, okay, so you file that. And it shows the income. All the income on the nonprofit, which is a little bit weird. You know, money from the state, money, it all filed on that, which we didn't want to get into how that is. But it's very interesting, and there could be some fascinating things between this status. And you're saying your Northern reversed two private folks. Well, the statute says no. But then again, they can't take private property and say, now it's ours, unless you can.
Well, the Northern Arizona Historic Society, not that, could file a 501c3 and they could pick it up.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit like it's a bifurcated thing. So it is.
Right. So one of the property, because it's related, if the museum decides not to exist, the property is like that.
That's county property, I think. Or not real sure, but that's county property, I think.
So it go back to the county, right? Because the county made arrangements for the museum.
That's right. They gave us, the Northern Arizona Historic Society, who then transferred it to the AHS. The lease, I mean the property. But if this society goes under, then it goes back to
If there's a reversion, a real estate reversion, then that would be correct.
But there's a reversion on the collection. This is what amazes me. And I don't know how that would work.
There's a reversion even when they say, our guys, our nonprofit is giving you this stuff so long as it's used for the business. It isn't coming back to us.
That's
a gift with a reversion.
That's a chart.
It is? Well, that's for another thing we need to study.
Well,
that is a conflict now, what we do about it.
That's for another day.
Of course it is, but it's a good example, though, of these issues that...
I'm not going to bring that one.
Okay, we'll move on. I want you to know that thing now.
Boy, I have a question. So from the macro level here, how does this discussion mesh with all your other meetings, all your other conversations?
We're going to have to look. This is right into what I want to get done as president. But what it does is going to have to make us look at every facet of the organization, because just as an example, some of the committees, the board controls some of those committees and their functions that should actually be going on with the staff.
Right.
We need to clean those things up so people know what their responsibilities are. And we need to prioritize. That's why I was asking a while ago, what were the priorities? So we need to get those policies taken care of in some kind of priority.
The collections is a staff problem, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
And the 1 to 10 is an organizational problem, who we have our MOUs with, our agreements with. 1 to 10, I think, are really important. But I think that there's who knows? Let's move on. We could be here all day.
We could.
Restricted work groups, I drafted it in a very, very rough form, 3 amendments to the bylaws that I think should be presented. Don cleaned them up, and Richard really cleaned them up, and I think they look really good.
Yeah, I didn't.
We didn't change
them. I don't know, but did you put them in a format that, you've got John's input, you've got mine, and you have your original, but kind of like...
Well, discard my original. That's just to get you guys working.
Oh, okay. I just amended your original, just put a couple of words.
No, you shouldn't have done that. You should have... But I don't have one of those red interlaced little lines that go through it. I can't figure out how to make that work. But I think you and John have some good ideas. Well, can we present those both to the board? And say, here's 2 examples you can draw.
Well, I guess you can make... That one would be for this group here to say, yeah, makes sense.
Does everybody have
who is presented? I don't even have a memo. I wrote you. I just left them. I'm not sure I've got a copy of your memo.
There were 3 of them, correct? Or there more than that?
AHS on that.
I think there's 3.
There's 3. There's 1 on the change of the date of the annual meeting. And so that's going to be a tough one. The second one is the quorum for the committees. I think Richard has a good idea on that one.
And then John had, we could say all the people so that you have, more flexibility in the coordination.
I like to have 5 or more, but I don't
think... Well, 5 or more.
I don't think we can mandate that.
You could have 5. Can you mandate 5?
I don't think you can mandate the number of people on the committee, but... some committees don't need a lot.
But we need to look at what committees we need, too, because we may only need about 4 or 5 committees.
So presently, no quorums required for board committees, correct? Some minimum.
That's one we have to change because we...
The one person theoretically could have convened a committee, made a bunch of
Now remember, all committees, including the AHS board,
properly noticed meeting you can meet. You just can't do
anything.
I mean, you can talk, you just can't have a resolution. So, yeah, one of the things that you should have is the, in the policy, here is the current open meeting law. I did. I'm just going to have an open meeting law and make it, and we could put it in the bylaws, maybe you, or maybe you already have.
You know, I would do this. I would say, take a look. We don't have one that just went in yesterday. Take a look at them. If you have a problem with any of Richard's, let me know, and John's not.
Why would you think the changing of the date would be tough? These look very obvious.
The changing of the date, because you have, an amendment has to be filed to give the members of the board have to be noticed 30 days prior.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the date for the November 7th.
Can't do it.
We could do it.
Oh,
I got this thing out a long time ago. You know, I had an agenda set up a long mm-hmm. time ago, but I neglected to count the days. That's my fault.
But no issue if you wanted to roll it over to 2000.
Well, the bylaws, the way the bylaws, of course, can be amended by the board. Now,
yes, they can be amended by the board, but 30 days notice to each one of the board members.
Oh, you're not talking about the members, the society members, the board members. Okay.
Yeah. The board,
that's my law providing
the first rule. I thought I was going to make an assignment. I apologize. Well, I sent you that thing and said, yeah, if we can extend the date of this meeting until after your executive meeting, I just waited too long.
When you get ready to talk about that one specifically, I got some information for you. I don't want to jump in with.
Well, jump into it.
One of them, I told you I just got back from the meeting. Emily told me that the chances of us getting the rotation of board members changed is almost impossible. It'll have to go through legislation.
But I don't understand the issue.
Oh. The way they were appointed board members, there are 16 that are going to come up for appointment this in June of 19. 16 of the board members. Yeah. This for
16.
Wow. So that means that if no one came back on the board, you'd end up with, what, 9 people that had some experience, and you could have 16 that didn't know anything about it, theoretically about it. I talked to her about that this morning. We spent a long time talking about it, and she says the chance, she says it's by statute that the governor has to appoint for a 4-year term, and the chances of him wanting, being able to change that are almost null and void. We have to go get legislation to get it done. To get legislation done, she said, it's going to bring up some other factors that may cause you problems that you don't want to do with legislators. And so I said, okay, I got a good idea. So I want you to know everything I talked about. I said, what would happen if I was capable of getting board members to agree to be appointed for 4 years and then 2 years after they appointed, 6 of them resigned. So then they'd have to appoint 6 for that group. And in 4 years, you could have it staggered. She says, oh, that's really a good idea, except for one little thing. You don't appoint, the governor doesn't appoint for 4 years on a continuing term. He appoints for whatever is left in that
term. Yeah. He appoints for 2 years, that's correct.
You know, is what happened. So that didn't go over real well. But she said the chances of getting them appointed in the fall are going to be really tough. So that's why I suggested a month or so ago that we change the annual meeting to the spring so that we could have the annual meeting tied in with the membership, because members have to vote on the officers to get it done. She thought that was, as far as the governor's office concerned, a good idea to move to the spring. I wanted to talk to John about this, because if we could tie it to the history convention at the same time, then there may possibly be more members there to get them involved. And all our meeting would be a luncheon. sometime during that, and you know more about that.
Well, we did that a couple of times in the past.
And it worked okay.
Yeah,
didn't
yeah.
It?
Yeah.
So you want to leave that amendment on? You want to go ahead and make the amendment?
Yeah, I would like to, so we can.
But you give me a date, and I'll, if it's coincide, I can just say it coincide with the Earthland History Commission.
Well, I don't think you have to say that.
I don't, why don't we just say we can set the date? And do we need a month in there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Which
well,
would
no, be? You could say the meeting's exactly
the same. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You couldn't leave it that open. The annual meeting will be when we say it.
When we, but now, and I want your opinion on Bruce, and I want yours to be with the thing that's really detrimental in changing the annual meeting from November to the spring, especially since we have the governor's doing the appointing. And we're not going to get anybody appointed in the fall. Legislation is not even in session. I started in August to get these people appointed. They didn't get appointed until May. And I worked at it. I mean, I was down there.
So what do you want us to say?
Something that gives us the flexibility to have the meeting in the spring so that we can get possibly the appointment of the directors by the meeting time in the spring.
Spring is probably too vague a term.
No, we're not going to. Why don't we just say the annual meeting will be held in April of each year, provided, however, that the board of directors can set the
If you have April now, don't you go?
Comma or it's otherwise determined by the board? Is that too much flexibility?
That's
the term board.
What's the word? Common sense, really. But.
Okay.
You want it to be in springtime.
Yeah.
Okay, on the other two amendments, does anybody have any objection? Let me just take a Richard's on the. Richard, I can't remember what yours, whether yours is John's, which one.
Well, mine is the husband and quorum members, and I just put a word in there.
Okay.
Try to distinguish when you use the word members from board members from other people. Other people who aren't board members. So I said individual, you know, for the chapter and so forth, to be members of the board, and in the case of committee, it should be individuals. No, so you don't need to hung up and say, well, you couldn't have a quorum because these guys weren't all board members.
And just to clarify, Bill, so the first two seem very logical and we can come up with something. So is number three off the board based on what Boyd has said?
What's three? I don't
agree with the change of date.
No, three is an amendment to...
Extending the terms of office, one year.
Which it sounds like that's not a...
No, that has to do with the election.
That's the officers.
I see.
Not the board.
Right now, 3 years. Right now, the officers, if I remember it right,
would
be elected for 2 years.
Okay.
I mean, 1 year at a time.
Correct. I don't know that he had the position. Michael Wade's the one.
I didn't.
This.
Yeah.
Got it.
But I was right with you to say, well, for sure, I'm not going to be able to extend the term of a member of a board member, for sure. But we can say
the
term of an office can be really that.
It seems like these first three then sound necessary, logical, and
I don't think there's anything controversial about
that.
No. Okay, I'll put that in the minutes.
I have a meeting with, keep losing my documents.
On the back of the bylaws, they have a running summary, which is 2005 bylaws. And so 2005, the bylaws were meant to say the following. It hasn't been done since 13, so.
You know, I don't know how to do that. I'm sure that, okay, and the secretary.
Well,
I don't know how to interline these things. I'm just going to have to say, this is what we need to do. And
no, this is just added in the back of this. It's not even a bylaw. It's just in the back page of the bylaw. It says, these have been amended and followed. And that's not even a bylaw. It's just a,
so you just want to add it on there?
Well, it's all just take the back page of what's there. You add 16, that's this one. 13, I mean. And then March of 6th.
March 11th to 16th isn't on there.
Okay, so we need to add those on.
And then today, whenever the board approves these other things, that'll be another one.
He's the secretary of this board.
I'm not. No, but I'm just saying, we
need to add it on there.
Because when you have this many changes, you say, well, what the hell are we doing in November of 97? You know, well, we don't have all of them there, but it just makes it a handy thing.
I agree.
Now, we got none of it. It's not about
when we come up with a final draft of these, I can give it to the board in some form.
Right.
And the board will then hand it to James and say, prepare these as the amended bylaw.
Oh, am I correct? That's the job.
We don't have any. We have to direct the staff to do it.
All right. As long as I have it, because I don't want to be responsible for running the lines for you to do all
that. No.
And James and I have had discussions very deep about what's the board's responsibility and what's the staff's responsibility.
Clerical stuff is.
All right.
Yeah, that.
Now, like in a school district, sometimes the superintendent secretary works as the board secretary for so much of the time. I mean, even in the salary, it will pay the superintendent secretary so much out of the board.
That's in your bandwidth. James ought to have a secretary that works part-time for the
school. Yeah, and currently, he doesn't have any.
I can't send an open meeting on everybody on there and argue. So that we ever
call come back.
So we need to call the secretary and she would send it out there for there was no violation of any open meeting law. But we don't have that anymore, so we're still going around the bush trying to avoid.
I mean, the president was just saying, I think they're advertising. Are they advertising
this meeting? I believe so. There was some. Oh, I can't.
We need to get a sector early.
Yeah.
Okay. Next thing on the agenda is the oral written report by Boyd Coy, president about what he thinks about the assistance of our workers. You got a copy of it, isn't it? On our agenda, don't you?
Yeah.
What about? What progress we made with our support groups and working with?
Let me see what it says. I don't have a pornograph in here.
Oh.
I think that's the AG document that I was having in mind. It's not an opinion. Yeah.
You mean the one about the gift?
I don't know. It just says receive the informal letter from the AG dated 8/16/18.
I'm sorry Lacey isn't here, but I'm going to ask you guys. In a board meeting, he described the gift law as Settle's Law, the quote. Can you tell me what that means? And then I'm going to tell you my own experience as an interim museum director, where we were not allowed to give away anything for fundraising groups. For instance, Girls and Boys Club want to have an annual raffle. They are asking for 5 or 10 free tickets to the museum. And we get a lot of them twice a year, spring and fall. And I haven't had any experience with this, and I was told no.
Well,
you're giving away, just categorically no. You're not to do that.
Did the Boys and Girls Club give you $150,000?
No.
What did they give you in return?
They rented out the facility.
No.
They
paid us. They paid us a rental fee. They used the facility and we got money from that.
Right? You could have included in that transaction passes to the museum. That would not have been problematic.
It would not have been.
If you just gifted them to them just out of the goodness of your heart.
No.
Or a state entity,
here's the problem. You're saying you're not at heart because these people are good customers.
Right.
And you're right, you just give a gift. So that, here's the problem.
There's confusion within the group.
You talk about, everybody discusses, NAFTA and GLICA. GLICA, they raised probably $150,000 to $250,000 over the last 5 years. Okay, this group
the Sports Society, Mayor Patrick. They have a fundraising organization, I mean a fundraising membership drive going on, and they wanted to offer passes to all new members so they could increase the ranks of their membership. The passes also, I mean these little subscription forms also say you can also do an Arizona Sports Society for a member. In fact, we suggest you do it. We support this group completely. Good everybody. Well, the executive director has a letter from the AP's office that says you can't get more than that. Well, unless there is a substantial $150,000 is a lot of money.
But it didn't say, in other words, when the question, like what answer you get is highly dependent on what question you get. And if you say, these people gave us $150,000, and we would like to continue them to continue payment and as a token, then I think you could have a different answer. But the way the question may have been framed is, we'd like to give away some tickets to some friends, what do you think? Well, then you almost can only have one answer.
That's right. And that's the way it was framed. And I want to reframe it, put it back to the same AG, who was an informal opinion, by the way. An informal AG opinion. I say, here are the facts. They give us and give an exact amount that's given to them. In return, they want passes for all new members.
So they can continue to support us with more.
And they want a 10% discount from the museum, the shop.
No, we're going to do all that stuff.
Pardon?
We're going to give the passes to the NAPs,
right?
And then we'll get a 10% discount.
Okay, we agree to that as the executive. You agree to that as that executive committee, but it's in violation of that informal law.
Regardless of that information, give it away that you choose from the AG, you're going to.
The decision. But the opinion was based on inadequate information.
Yeah, that's right.
And the next
problem is with Reardon.
Yeah.
Then I asked the chairman of the governance committee to prepare some information to send to the attorney general's office, and either we will meet with them together to go over what the facts are, because we don't believe that all of them are presented appropriately.
It just sounds like a general gift of public property.
It does say, however, if there is, I'm saying quick vote over, whatever the right word is, it doesn't have to be, it's worth $10, you got to get $10. If you're giving a $10 ticket to somebody that's been supporting you, that is more than enough.
What I didn't understand, these people are sitting on a stack of money.
His ID number is being used with regard to
the bank account. 6 figures of those money.
They work hell for that money.
Yeah, they benefit a lot of groups more than us. Yeah. They're not the only ones that benefit.
Yuma is 200 plus two. 200.
Oh, yeah. Yuma gave over $240,000.
These volunteers. I don't want to kick them off.
No, that's a good decision.
And anyway, so I'm going to go back to her. Borkum, I think her name is. Could I get you to reevaluate this thing?
And if you want to go, I'll be happy to go with you. I think I'm living my life at the capital right now for the last 6 months.
Really?
I'm serious.
When do you go to the AG office like this one? There's a letter sent, and then she responds to the letter. And not necessarily in a timely manner either, because that was sent quite a while ago. So when do you look for an informal opinion, and when do you want something, what would make something more formal in your mind?
They would literally number it, and it would be public record.
Okay.
And
have a hearing?
No. So
they do the
reading.
Dr. Coy has heard me say many times. That's just somebody's opinion, by the way.
You know?
That's all it is. It's not binding on anybody, even when it's got a number on it. It's still not binding on anybody. And there are judges that have been known to say,
screw you.
I will give the weight to the AG's opinion that I choose to give, and it may be some, it may be none, it may be a lot.
It's the
what's your opinion, lawyer?
It might be the lowest on the rank.
There we go. A case decided by another court would certainly have great precedent over what
I would give the same weight to an attorney's brief that I would give to the AG opinion. And I think, you know, when they've researched it, everybody's researching it, it's just another attorney putting it in, sort of like an amicus brief, you know, or it's just coming in.
And the reasonable person decision falls in that capacity, right. That decision.
It
depends. Mark, you were telling me that all the time.
So it provides maybe a little comfort to a body that wants to do X.
Well, for sure.
And
now, that it does accomplish, it is not hard-headed. It does accomplish the job of saying, why did you do that? Well, we got an opinion. But was there, it was still wrong. Well, okay, but
we had it.
Don't blame me.
You know what I think part of the problem is people do not understand the big picture of the organization. Because when you look at NAPS and Yuma and the lead, all those are volunteers that have a real interest in the museum, expending more of their time trying to raise money to give to somebody. And you don't want to irritate those people.
Correct.
Isn't that? I mean, that's just how simple it is. And people forget that they're volunteers that have a real interest in the museum. And you should be hugging them every time you can.
Part of the problem with this MOU thing, as I told you, the auditors had it in mind that these were arms of the society, all of them, and they needed to be more carefully directed in what they had to do for us. And they just don't do that.
No.
It's the same thing.
Same thing.
Get out there and get more money for us. Yeah. And don't give it to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And we're going to tell you what we're going to do with it.
It doesn't work.
And, you know, most of those people are kind of independent.
They are, and rightfully so.
You bet they are. You should be.
All right. We're getting somewhere. Almost to the end. Okay, Dr. Roy, thank you.
You mean you could have done all this by writing, but you chose to be pleasant enough?
And then there's road matters for consideration. Do you have anything else you guys want
to consider? Talk about this girl.
I don't think. Do you have anything else you want to raise that we need to look at?
No, I mentioned in the letter, I don't know if we got in my letter, you know, but when they were making this transition to state-appointed directors and they did the statute, they have a provision in there, what I have here, that says the board shall appoint every year in every county historically significant organizations, or worse, that's not the chapters, and from each of those, a director shall be a nominee. So that means we're about 40 or 50 board members short. And so what I, you know, and what we did was the second part ends, and the board may elect chapters by doing the following. We just said, well, it says this, but it really doesn't mean that. What we want to mean is appoint members, one from a chapter, and that's what we did. But it still says that you shall have mutually. What is the term for the affiliates that we use to keep it in your mind? So this chapter, you know, the people out there, the affiliates. So that's the word that we use. And so that's what they're trying to say is we appoint all these affiliates in every county every year, and then one board member shall come from each of those every Jesus, you have couldn't get them in the museum, you know. That's what it actually says. And so, and I pointed out to Bill that, you know, had an auditor reading that and say, well, where are all these guys?
Yeah.
So at some point when the cleanup will be safe, to your point of don't rattle a cage with, we should clean that up as government secretary.
That is statutory what you're
saying,
right?
Well, I have it, yes.
And do we have a friendly legislator that would say, what do you folks need from us? We can get that accomplished. And something
we're working on finding one.
Okay.
We're working for
something as simple as
we
can't
have
a few board members.
Feel the other one.
Well, that's always the problem.
But the point is that as a governance, you say, well, are you playing by the rules?
Yes.
So the board of directors shall annually designate one or more charitable organizations within each county of the state that incorporate a nonprofit and have a functioning historical value based on criteria established by their board of directors. And then the board of directors may have a chapter. That's what I said. And then D3 says one member from who is recommended by each of the designated historical organizations as prescribed. So in other words, one of every one of those should be on the board.
But Richard, what's going to happen is not what could happen is somebody from an affiliate could come up saying, I want to be on the board. We want a member on our board. And then what do we do?
My point is it should be cleaned up in some kind of a quiet, non-controversial, well, it shouldn't be controversial because it's absurd. So whoever drafted this had no idea how we operate. And we just threw that out there.
But we have like 60 affiliates, I think.
Yeah, so then we got we're missing 60 board members.
With regard to directors are inconsistent with the statute.
Of course they are, and because it's otherwise it's non-functional. So, but just for showing this.
And that's been true, was that true in 2012
it's
when
this was enacted?
So the auditors just were not charged with that type of issue, and they didn't read it.
Well, they were charged at all.
If they ever read it, they're going to ask. The main part, now we have minutes, and I can say that they can be reviewed by contacting the Arizona Historical Society in Arizona. That's the draft minutes, right?
This is a test. Let's see.
No, it does say that. But it does say right in the opening book, recorded or written minutes.
Okay. We're good. Does anybody have anything else they want to do? No, you did. You guys do a nice report. Did a nice job on that. That's so important. You don't know. I was through that audit. So was Richard. And I mean, I was drafting things that...
Yeah.
It's a miserable process.
There was a little problem every time we turned around.
I don't know if it was conflict with staff or that these people are just unbelievable.
They already got all the staff.
In the upper room, yeah. Yeah, please.
Most
of them are.
Some of them are. And I end this recording.